This is Kevin Anderson filling in for Jason Goff on the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Coming up on today's episode, free agency winners and losers. The Lakers, obviously at the top of everybody's list for winners. We have a couple other teams who made some really good moves over the last 4 days in the NBA. Plus, which team and teams did not do so well in free agency? Here's a little hint. One of them is a little bit north of Chicago. Plus, in terms of the Bulls, are you surprised that they didn't blow up this roster or that they're running back essentially the same team that won 22 games last season? Casey Johnson and Rob Schaefer give us their answers to all those questions and more up ahead.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Kevin Anderson filling in for Jason Goff, who has the day off, joined by our Bulls insider, Casey Johnson, and reporter Rob Schaefer. You can find their fantastic work at NBCSportsChicago.com or the My Teams app. Gentlemen, we are now seemingly at the very end of free agency. It was a lightning quick 3 days over the weekend. The first question I want to throw out to you, and Casey, I'll get you this first. We heard all along the last several weeks that the Bulls were targeting a lead playmaker either in the draft or free agency. And seeing how they drafted a small forward slash power forward and only had one outside vet come in with the addition of Denzel, bringing him back as an RFA off the qualifying offer. Was that just a smokescreen, or do you think somewhere in the last few weeks, both Karnišovas and Eversley became more comfortable with who is on this roster right now?
Yeah, Kevin, I can't definitively answer the second one. I can answer the first one. I don't think it was a smokescreen at all, even though it hasn't come to fruition. I was probably one of the loudest reporters on that front, and that's because somebody that I talked to that I trust had heard pretty directly that the Bulls were going to address point guard in the offseason. You know, I actually thought it would probably be in the draft, but, you know, luckily I was able to kind of shift gears closer to the draft and get onto the Patrick Williams train, because those signs were all over the league for the people that I talked to in the conversations I had around the league. I was expecting kind of what they did in free agency, maybe a little bit more of initiator, but kind of a combo guard, decent shooter, good locker room guy, who can take some turns at point guard. And I think Temple might stretch that latter definition, but once they went Patrick Williams in the draft, what they did in free agency didn't really surprise me. And it's clear, at least from my seat, that they're kind of looking to tackle point guard by committee, which would go against, you know, my initial reporting. But, you know, things change. Things are fluid. And, you know, quite frankly, they might not be done. They might have a trade up their sleeve. They're not, like, calling me on a daily basis updating me with their plans. So, you know, we can explore the point guard by committee angle in a little bit after I shut up and listen to Rob's thoughts on the topic.
What do we got, Rob? Come on. I know you have some good insight for us.
Yeah, I certainly don't have any insider insight that's, more incisive than Casey's in terms of how their plans have actually evolved. In terms of whether this is kind of the roster we're looking at and if they're comfortable with it, I think there's, you know, I can't imagine that they are, because I don't know that anybody can be comfortable with running back 13 of 15 full-time players from a roster that won 22 games last year. I mean, obviously in a 65 game sample, I mean, there was obviously more widespread things that needed to be addressed other than, you know, adding a top five pick is certainly something. And, you know, bringing in a mid-level exception guy like Garrett Temple, who maybe he'll be able to run a little offense off the bench and make, you know, spot up threes and defend his position. You know, there's something there. There were certainly bigger changes that needed to be made. And I don't doubt that the front office did intend to do something a little bit more widespread. And maybe it was at the point guard position at one point or the other. But it seems like the market just kind of unfolded how it did. I suppose we'll see the point guard by committee approach in terms of evaluation might not be the worst thing in the world, because you really do find out in the case of Coby White, especially how much of a true point guard he's going to be able to be, how much of a table setter and a facilitator he's going to be able to be. So maybe there's a little bit of benefit from an evaluation standpoint there. And, you know, Patrick Williams, by all accounts, you know, has the point guard background, and I think they wouldn't have taken him with a top four or five pick if they didn't see him as having potential as a secondary playmaker. So maybe we'll see a little bit of that too. Maybe Wendell Carter Jr. puts on his facilitator hat a little bit more this year. So I would be surprised if that was a smokescreen. It's just, like you said, Casey, things are fluid and things change. And the way that everything kind of laid out, this is the roster that they're in, that they're presented with. Would they like to maybe make some more changes? I mean, I'd be shocked if a potential trade for Thad Young, for example, wasn't on their to-do list at some point. The question, of course, becomes who is the suitor? Casey and I were texting last night. I was trying to find one pretty furiously for a while there, and it's just tough with free agent dominoes still falling. You know, Denver looked like they could be a possibility for a second. They obviously filled their power forward slot by bringing back Millsap and Jamichael Green, bringing him in. So, you know, it's tough. I think there's still things settling in, but it is become pretty clear in retrospect that this was a year to kind of reset the coaching staff. And maybe it is just going to be evaluatory to see who in the core, maybe rebuild some of the value of people in the core, figure out where they're at in terms of what they can be moving forward. And then the big splash comes next summer. I know that's just not a satisfying answer for a lot of people. But it seems like that's how it unfolded. So I guess we just got to see what it turns into.
I mean, Rob, to your point about a potential Thad Young trade, it may be a situation in which that trade doesn't present a good match until you get through training camp or even a month into the season, and an injury to someone else's team and roster then makes an obvious connection with that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I broke it into tiers. I don't have my notes in front of me. But I had those teams broken up into tiers, and pretty much all of them at this point are in the bucket of one injury away from maybe, you know, being a phone call away. So maybe that's when that comes in. I mean, obviously a piece that could enhance their flexibility too would be something we've mentioned before, waiving Cristiano Felicio, who's in an expiring year, just eating the money and opening up the roster spot to maybe try to have some kind of flexibility there. There's another name that, as the season wears on, could maybe be in trade talks. So, you know, I don't think this necessarily means this is the roster set for the entire season. And who knows, they can make a trade tomorrow. Like I said, Casey, it kind of goes as it goes, but it does kind of seem, just based on the way that these last few days unfolded, that they are relatively content. I don't want to characterize it as if they're sitting back. I'm sure there's thorough evaluation and things of that nature going on. They're certainly not going to be satisfied with this roster moving forward in a long, long-term sense. But to me, there is a feeling of kind of finality to the big free agent moves anyway, and that this is kind of the roster that we're at least going to the training camp with.
Now, we know Karnišovas said on draft night that they valued and felt like a lot of other teams underrated Patrick Williams' playmaking ability. But I would be shocked if we saw him in any significant role in which he is getting a high usage rate or handling the ball at some point early the season. And certainly they feel like that's probably a skill that he is ready to develop, and at some point will be, you know, NBA ready to be a ball handler, given his skill set and his background. I'd be shocked if we saw him, you know, become a lead playmaker, or at least, you know, play that role early this season, if this season at all. Given the comment you just made, Rob, about the it feels like they are, at least the pieces are in place with this roster. KC, what message does it send to specifically Coby and Zach, the fact that they drafted Pat Williams, brought back Denzel, and signed Temple? Essentially, their backcourt is going to be very familiar. And if it's a point guard by committee or not with Sato mixed in, what specific message does this send to Kobe and Zach?
Well, I mean, I think it sends that they're going to have to provide a lot offensively because, you know, they didn't really change much of the roster from, you know, one of the worst offenses in the league last year. They basically swapped out Chris Dunn for Temple and Shaq Harrison for a 19-year-old rookie. Real quick on the Patrick Williams ball handling thing, I did find it interesting, guys. When I was talking to his high school coach last week, you know, he revealed just kind of casually that as recently as Sunday night before the draft, a Bulls official was texting him going, "Are you sure he played point guard for you?" I mean, you know, they'd obviously seen film or, you know, what film existed of him playing in high school, but I think they were kind of more questioning kind of back to like his freshman year, because he started on the varsity for this coach at a pretty strong program, West Charlotte High, as a freshman at point guard and played that position the first 3 years of his high school career. So I think they just kind of wanted, you know, one last cross of the T and dot of the I that this guy legitimately was a point guard until his senior year of high school. And obviously high school is a lot different than, you know, college, and then obviously a lot different than the NBA, but that was just a funny anecdote to me. But, you know, we're also, guys, and this, I'm just throwing this out there, we're also just assuming that Kobe's going to be starting a point guard. I assume that as well, but, you know, that's Billy Donovan's call. What if he somehow thinks that Sato is, you know, the answer there, like he was at the start of last season, and Kobe's, you know, that in that come off the bench, finish games, play 30 some minutes a night and kind of being the scoring guard off the bench initially and then finishing games. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there for discussion. So I really do think, given where the roster is now, that point guard committee by committee is the answer. You've also got another ball handler and decent passer in Denzel. And then don't forget our beloved Arch, you know, we'll take a charge for you any day of the week and be among the leaders in assist turnover ratio if you give him the minutes. So nothing's going to knock you over right there, but I do think that committee by committee is the approach they're going to take.
Rob, what do you think? I mean, are we going, is there potential in your mind of seeing Kobe not start the opening night?
I mean, I suppose, I mean, anything's possible at this point. I think being able to get people on record and kind of pry at what things look like when training camp opens will be illuminating in that regard. Like you were saying, Casey, I've been operating under the assumption that he would start only because of the tear that he finished on at the end of last season, which obviously culminated in him making his first start. And then the season obviously shuttering the night after. So I just kind of assume that Kobe's also spoken to media and had a chance to kind of plant his flag of being the starting point guard next season is a goal of mine. So he got to plant that flag really before offseason rumors and reports began to swirl about the pursuit of a potential lead playmaker, a veteran guard that didn't obviously come to fruition or hasn't yet. So there's that I think frames the conversation even a little bit more in his direction. Moreover, to me, though, I just think if this is the situation, if you're running back the roster from last season, I just don't know that running it, even going a step further and running out the same starting five as you had opening night last season. I don't think you should make decisions based on narrative or sending a message, but I just think if you're going to truly evaluate the four under 25 guys and not counting Zach Levine under 23 guys age-wise, if you're truly going to make this season about evaluating them, which is kind of what it seems like it's heading towards right now, I think you kind of have to throw Kobe into the fire of being the starting point guard. I know that finishing games is oftentimes, especially in the NBA, as important as starting them, if not more so. But there is something to be said for putting that label on him, seeing how he fares, and just allowing him the chance to really be a captain and a facilitator for the offense. So I think that's something that I would do without having seen how training camp is going to play out. Perhaps Billy Donovan thinks that that Tomas Satoransky is the answer there, at least to start. And you know, if there's logic and evidence to back that up, you roll with it. But I just think that going into this year, it makes all the sense in the world to start Kobe and give him that shot just given that this is going to be largely the same returning roster, and just to shake some stuff up, to throw these young guys into different situations and seeing how they respond, and just really seeing what you have. I mean, I hate to use that phrase because it's so loaded, especially among Bulls fans, but you really do at some point have to, you know, just give Kobe the reins if you really want to see, and see how it goes. Now, maybe they've already made their mind up and it's just a matter of Satoransky being the stopgap and Kobe being in that bench role until they find that bridge, that next answer at guard. But I just think as stands now, there's kind of nothing to lose by doing it. I think people, you know, a lot of fans, and I'm sure the Bulls would love to be in the playoff hunt, make the playoffs this year. And maybe, again, you see Satoransky is more of a step towards that. But at the stage they're at, I just think you have to be thinking about getting a real firm sense for the core pieces so that throughout this season and going into next season, you can be more in a position to leverage to be making the big splash moves that maybe you want to make or that they should be making if, you know, next season starts playing out similarly to the last one from a win-loss perspective. But it's an interesting question. It probably is the most prominent position battle going into training camp. It's probably the most uncertain position in the starting lineup, at least. And then we'll see kind of how Patrick Williams falls in terms of what roles and what positions and what lineups he's figuring his way into. But point guard, I mean, it really is the one to watch for all the buzz this offseason and just the way that the depth chart is balanced right now.
Yeah, Rob, you make a really excellent point about the valuation. I think certainly we know that the way the playoff picture is going to work next year, that the top 10 teams essentially in each conference are going to be in the playoff picture, and the Bulls absolutely want to be in the top 10. In fact, I'd say from an organization standpoint, it would be considered a failure if they're not in the top 10, regardless of what happened the last two seasons with the win total and this roster. The evaluation thing, I mean, KC, certainly, I think there is an argument to be made that from Donovan's point of view, that possibly the best role for Kobe is to get that second unit scoring and then play a significant number of fourth quarter minutes. But I also think from an evaluation standpoint, it's not just about, okay, what are we really getting out of Markin and what are we really getting out of Wendell Carter? To me, the valuation of Zach LaVine is probably just as significant for this front office, because with 2 years left on his deal, if they feel like entering next offseason that he is not the guy they feel that is going to be piece 1A or even 1B to a championship caliber team, that if they're not going to give him a big extension coming after that contract, they would probably look to move him next offseason. And I think you're going to want to really have a very, very strong idea what Kobe and Zach are together before you make that decision, whether on Zach LaVine. And so, like, to me, the benefit of seeing Kobe and Zach play together is really being able to evaluate both at the same time and which possibly both or one of those players or none you feel like is really going to lead your team in terms of in the backcourt for the next 5+ years.
Yes, that's for sure. I'm in complete agreement with both you guys. In fact, to be clear, I'm not suggesting that's what Billy Donovan's going to do. I'm just throwing it out there for discussion. I mean, we're just all assuming that the starting lineup's going to be Kobe, Zach, Porter, Markin, and Carter, but we're not the head coach, and we've never covered this head coach. Now, I think that's probably a safe assumption. There's a reason why we're assuming that, but I just threw it out there more for conversation, you know. And I agree with you guys moving forward that given where they're at it as a franchise, if this is the roster they take to opening night, that to me should be the starting lineup.
Casey, you don't need to explain yourself about the discussion.
I mean, it's assumed that we all agree at all times.
Yes. So there's going to be someone who's going to blog Casey Johnson, quote, Kobe will be coming off the bench next season. Man, we know at some point someone's
exactly
going to take those words. I'm curious both your thoughts on, given that the offseason is essentially over for this team, there was a pretty vocal contingent of Bulls fans who felt like more change was going to happen to this roster. Are both of you surprised or possibly not surprised at all on how little turnover we've had on this roster from last season?
I'm not that surprised just because, you know, I'm guessing that they, you know, were active and probably wanting to try to do more, but it takes, you know, two teams to tango. As, you know, Rob said earlier, he's sitting there racking his brain trying to figure out matches for Thad Young, who, after the drafting of Patrick Williams, you know, really doesn't fit much of a role except for obviously being an awesome veteran mentor and great locker room guy. But if, you know, he's at a stage of his career where he still wants to play a lot, this to me isn't the roster for that. I mean, you've got two young guys you need to develop in Lauri Markkanen and Patrick Williams at that position. I know that they've said that Patrick Williams, they don't know what position he is. I personally think he's probably going to be more of a four ultimately. I know that can be blended into the 3-4 in today's world. And, you know, there'll probably be times he's even guarding five or playing five in some small centers. That's that small lineups as Thad did last year. But I don't know. My sense is that they were probably trying to do more. And you know, you say, we keep saying the offseason's over. Well, it might not be. I mean, things still can happen. And, you know, I do think that given what they've said about some of the players on the roster, that they feel that it's roster underachieved and there's a lot of talent there. I think that they're maybe not only in an evaluation period, but maybe hopefully trying to get the value up of some of these people as they move forward. Because this we can all agree on, guys, the way Arturis Karnišovas the city wants to play stylistically, this roster doesn't really fit that. I mean, it just doesn't have very good two-way, doesn't have a ton of two-way players, not a lot of great passers on this team. There's not a lot of great motion. And that's how he said he wants to play. So I know part of that can be maybe assisted by the coaching staff and the player development program, and also the offense that they run and the sets that they run and the stylistic style that Billy Donovan and his staff ultimately hit on. But you know, I think that we could be having this. I understand maybe that angst now, but I think save that conversation for next summer. I think this by next summer, this roster is going to look significantly different than it does right now.
Yeah, and I think that reason, the inflexibility of the cap sheet that Arturis Karnišovas and the rest of the new front office inherited, I think that is part of the reason why I was a little bit less surprised that there wasn't so much movement. I mean, it was funny that, you know, really geographically almost aligned between Chicago having a whole new front office and being a rebuilding team and the Detroit Pistons having a brand new front office and being a real rebuilding team. You saw completely opposite strategies being employed. And I mean, you know, that it's just an interesting dichotomy between those two. I still haven't really dug into, and we're going to talk about free agency. I still haven't really dug into what Detroit did. It didn't make really a lick of sense on the surface. Maybe there's some kind of master plan in there that I'm missing for now. But I don't think that necessarily means that the Bulls necessarily did the right thing by standing pat. But it was a little bit unsurprising from the sense of the, you know, not having cap space. I mean, not having cap space doesn't exclude you from making transactions. I mean, you know, you've seen plenty of teams make improvements this offseason without entering it with max cap space or things close to that. That doesn't necessarily exclude you from that. But I think to your point, Casey, and I agree that this roster doesn't necessarily reflect the desired play style, or at least what he said briefly, that Arturis Karnišovas wants to abide by, wants to build, and wants to play with. The other thing that he's made pretty clear, and maybe this is more through his actions than his words, is that from a front office standpoint, from a transactional standpoint, I just think he likes to operate from a position of valuing value. And I don't see how you can, I just don't know where the moves were coming from this Bulls team, where you were going to make moves that were of a maximum value, because, you know, other than Zach LaVine, and I think, you know, the young pieces, depending on which teams you're talking to and how much they might value one player over the other, I just don't think there are many pieces on this roster that are at the top of their value right now. In fact, I think a lot of these players are at career lows in terms of trade value around the league. So I just don't know where the big shakeup was coming from, A, with the cap inflexibility, and B, not wanting to sell low on guys, frankly. So I think that's where the evaluation comes in terms of not only are the Bulls getting a chance to see what they have for the future and who they might want to build around, but they're also getting a chance to showcase players for other teams potentially. And then those big, roster shakeup moves can maybe happen later. So I never would have ruled out that they might have found a way to be more assertive, to make a bigger splash. But the fact that we're now at the end of this and they haven't doesn't necessarily surprise me For those reasons, I get that it's frustrating to sit and wait and to sit and run back basically the same roster that there was so much consternation about last season. I think that's it's totally I totally empathize with the frustration over that. But I just think it would be bad business to come in and rip the whole thing apart without really, you know, from a value perspective and from an evaluation perspective, really knowing what kind of leverage standpoint you were operating from. I just don't think that would necessarily be good business unless a really irresistible set of deals came along. So not surprising to me, frustrating to some, yes, and understandably so. But this is just kind of the situation they're in right now. Bulldog, I know you said that, you know, finishing top 10, if they weren't able to do that this year, that it would be an organizational failure. Well, it's going to be the way that some of the Eastern Conference teams in their tier have operated in free agency in the draft. It's going to be a tougher proposition than it looked like a week ago this time. I think we had an inkling of a feeling, especially with Atlanta, that might be true last week around this time. But now it's been confirmed just when you see the moves that Atlanta and Charlotte made specifically. So it's going to be an interesting year. It's going to be kind of a year that I anticipate we could feel like this team is in limbo more times than not. But we'll see. I mean, the only thing that you can hope for as a fan and hope for from a front office perspective is that the internal improvements are enough to drive you up in the win column and also drive up the value of some of the players that saw that crater last season, to be honest. But not surprised, but we just got to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, real quick, put aside the host hat. You're a Bulls savant. Let's say they run it back with 13 of the same 15 players. Let's say this is the roster opening night. What are your thoughts on that same question?
So if the front office, and really if I feel like last year's regression by certain players and underperformance by a lot of the players, I mean, let's be honest, we all point at the 22 wins and that was on a shortened season, but given what their schedule was in a non-coronavirus world, they weren't going to win 30 games. They had a very, very difficult last 3 to 4 weeks of the schedule that they ended up never playing. And I penciled it in for 25 wins total had they played those games. But given the roster that they had, I feel like there are a lot of guys who weren't utilized correctly in the offense and who were going to see much better seasons out of. I mean, certainly we know what Zach LaVine is. And like you just mentioned, about the tradable assets and truly of their tradable assets, Zach LaVine is the only, to borrow from Donald Rumsfeld, the only known. He's the only known asset that the Bulls really had to trade. Everyone else is known unknowns. We don't know what Kobe's true potential is. We don't know what Markkanen's true potential, Wendell Carter Jr., et cetera. We don't know really what they could. But given the roster last year and given the what I believe is still genuine talent on this team, like I don't look at this roster and I don't look at the group of young players that they have. I don't evaluate them and say these guys just aren't very good, right? I mean, certainly when you look at a player who was drafted 2 years ago, you can start to form a pretty good opinion about what their potential is, and certainly if they're going to be busts, like this guy's not going to be in the league 3 years from now. I don't see any of that on this roster. I mean, we look back at Marcus Teague, for example. We knew Marcus Teague's third year that he was probably not going to have a very long NBA career. When I look at Markkanen and Wendell, there's nothing that says to me, well, these guys are going to be out of the league in 2 years. It's the opposite. And so I think given Billy Donovan's track record of winning, not just with what he did with some very different Thunder teams, right? Like, we know the team that Billy Donovan inherited when he first took over the Thunder had a lot of talent, but he took some very different teams over his 5 years and made them playoff teams. I felt like the best coaching performance he had of his entire career was this past season with a team that was really not expected to do too much. And Chris Paul certainly was a huge part of that, but Donovan's coaching was a big part of that as well. So I've got faith and confidence that right now, given Donovan's track record, that he is going to be able to get the best out of this Bulls roster. Now, is that best enough to be top 10 in the East? Maybe not. I mean, certainly we're going to have the Chris Dunn revenge factor in Atlanta that is going to be an issue. And like you just mentioned, Charlotte's gotten better, and we know the rest of the East in regards to Brooklyn and certainly Boston, and we can go up and down that there's some talent out there. I mean, certainly Toronto may have gotten a little bit weaker, and we have no idea what playing in Tampa, how that's going to impact those players. And so that's a huge factor for them. But I look at this Bulls roster and, you know, I don't necessarily see a 41 win team. I want to see exactly when it's fully set, what it's like 2 weeks into training camp. But on December 22nd, I think both of you agree, and Tony as well, that we'll have a much better idea of where this roster stands. But right now, I don't look at this team and go, gosh, they have the exact same talent as a 22 win team. To me, they don't. To me, they've got the potential talent of a 35 win team. Now, is 35 enough to get you into the postseason as a 10 seed and into that mini tournament? I hope so. I don't know if it's guaranteed to happen, though.
By the way, when you said 41 win team earlier, you're talking about 10 games over 500, by the way, baby.
good point with a 72 win season. See, you say my brain is always in 82 season, 82 game mode. So, I guess good point, because when we have our predictions of win totals, we've got to all recalibrate 72 games, not 82. And quite honestly, 72 is probably unrealistic when we get down to it. I mean, who knows what the games are going to be like.
Also, is that the first Donald Rumsfeld mention on Bulls Talk podcast history? It has to be.
First I've heard. First
you guys are familiar with that quote, right?
What did you say?
What was that?
Are you familiar with that quote?
Come on, of course, man. Okay. I'm old. Come on. Yeah.
I'm not.
All right, mm-hmm. I'll have to break it down for you right now. So there is this legendary Donald Rumsfeld quote in which he is talking about I think he quite frankly is talking about warfare, right? And he's talking about, when you evaluate and, you know, battle with another country or with in terms of intelligence, he says from an intelligence standpoint, you've got the known knowns, which are the things you know, right? About your own roster, the other team's roster, et cetera. Then you have the known unknowns, which are the things you know you don't know. Potential in regards to Kobe White's potential, Marcus's potential, et cetera. But then there's the third thing, which is the unknowns, unknowns, which are the things you don't know, which are going to factor into the equation in the evaluation that you have no idea what they are or even that they exist. So that's the known known quote.
Would Jim Boylan's late timeouts be in the unknown knowns?
Yeah, absolutely. You didn't know you had to worry about.
Yeah. Well, no, but it's interesting though, and it speaks to your point, Bulldog. And I, you know, I don't mean to convey that I don't agree that Billy Donovan is a massive coaching upgrade and should have, a pretty material impact on individual players and team wide performance. I think that's definitely something that will improve the team, and you know, just getting guys in a position to succeed could have an exponential effect. But it's going to be interesting, and I'm borrowing from our pal Cody Westerlund on Twitter. I thought he put it really well this season, to the point that you were making, Bulldog. We're going to really find out how bad of a coach Jim Boylan was, or how bad of a coach Jim Boylan wasn't. I mean, that's going to be really the defining kind of takeaway from this season. Really, assuming that we roll into next season with 13 to 15 players returned, you know, who knows how that evolves over the course of the year, as we've laid out. But I think there are a lot of people out there that think that Jim Boylan was so bad or such a destructive coach that really bringing in anybody, much less Billy Donovan, who has a pretty respected acumen for player development and obviously NBA success. And I agree with you. The last season was probably his most impressive coaching job, definitely at the NBA level. Arturis Karnišovas agrees with that too. He said that at Billy Donovan's introductory press conference. We're just going to have to see. We're just going to have to see. And it should be illuminating. It'll be illuminating for me, at least, especially covering the team and being up close from a beat reporter perspective, how much of an impact coaching really can have and really will have, especially when you consider the staff being overhauled too, and the front office implementing some change across, you know, scouting and player development and things of that nature. I really think that'll be the enduring take.
Yeah, to expand on that point, I don't think we will spend much time over the next 6 months speaking about Jim Boylan in the last season. But I will say, I don't think necessarily that Jim Boylan was a, quote, bad coach. I just think that given his schemes and his systems, his players either didn't get enough time to fully acclimate themselves to what he wanted, or his players just were not best suited for the role he wanted them to play, and he didn't have the roster to run the system he wanted to. And certainly any coach, your entire goal is to get the best out of each and every one of your players. And that just, if you have hope that this Bulls roster is going to be better next year and this team is going to be better next season, you have to operate with the assumption that last year was a season in which the coach did not get the most out of his players, or the players didn't perform up to their abilities. It's either one.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah. All right, let's move on and wrap things up in regards to free agency overall. Casey, I'll start with you. Give me your mind, your clear-cut winner in free agency across the NBA.
Well, I don't even want to – and Rob and I have not consulted notes here, so I'll be curious to see what he says. And, you know, I could take the obvious one, but I'll maybe leave it for Rob. But, I mean, I think everybody would agree the Lakers got a hell of a lot better. But I'm going to go a different direction. So I think the Lakers would be – I kind of like the obvious one. And I like trying to find, like, maybe not so obvious ones. So I'm going to go with the Miami Heat, because I thought the Heat did a really nice job of not only improving their team, but also keeping themselves open in case something crazy happens with Giannis. They have, like, flexibility still in that situation while they still improve their team. I mean, Dragic, obviously, is really important to what they do. Myers Leonard, perhaps not as much so, but still a nice – serviceable big body, particularly come playoff time. And then I've always been a big Avery Bradley fan, always. And I think adding him and Mo Harkless helps them, you know, kind of just refortify while you're expecting another dominant season from Jimmy. And again, they've left themselves in position in case things go in a south direction, pun intended, from Milwaukee to Miami with Giannis. So that would be kind of my trying to find something different than the obvious winner in free agency.
Yeah, I thought you might go Lakers. My top one is Lakers because you're the defending champs and you only improve the roster. I think anyone would say that as the obvious choice. I'll go a little off the beaten path too, and I'm expanding a little bit outside of free agency.
Can I guess?
Kind of be off. Yeah.
Portland.
Portland would have been my number two or three, because I love the Covington addition. I love, and you know that I'm a fan of Derek Jones Jr. So obviously love that addition. They would have been in my top two or three. And I'm writing about this for tomorrow, winners and losers of free agency. I'm sure Portland will get a mention, even though I haven't gotten to them yet over the course of writing that. But to me, expanding it to the full offseason, it's Philly to me. In terms of their maneuvering, and incidentally, you know, or not so coincidentally, this comes in Daryl Morey's first offseason, helming basketball operations there. I think in the lead up to the draft, getting off of Al Horford's money without giving up too much in the way of draft capital, or at least not as much as people were expecting. You bring back Danny Green, who adds perimeter shooting, doesn't take anything away from your perimeter defense. And then obviously they then flip Josh Richardson for Seth Curry on draft night. I thought they made three really, 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 really strong value draft picks in Tyrese Maxey at 21, Isaiah Joe, I think they got at 49, just a real pure shooter at Arkansas. And then DePaul's own Paul Reed at 58. I think all three of those picks where they got them is incredible value. And then I think they go into free agency and you get Dwight Howard, who's coming off a pretty resurgent campaign last year for the minimum, basically, to back up Joel Embiid. I think that adds to their front court depth in a way that is complementary of Joel Embiid as opposed to creating a logjam in the way Al Horford did. And now you're going into next season, and between all those moves, you're looking at a roster that, to me, is just so much better constructed around their two superstars and Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. I'll be very, very interested to see where they fall in the East hierarchy. Even though none of those are conventional big, big, big splash moves, I just think when you not only improve the ancillary pieces just in terms of a performance perspective, but when you're doing that in a way that is also going to bring the best out of your star players, at least on paper, they were my big, big winner. I loved their offseason. Last offseason, a lot of people did, and it obviously exploded in their face. I think this is really the year that you could see them make a leap into the East elite, especially. And I like how Toronto recovered in terms of losing Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol. I like the Aaron Baines pickup. I think people are going to regret letting DeAndre Bembry kind of skate by for a near minimum deal. Like there are things I liked about the Raptors kind of bouncing back. But with Boston losing Gordon Hayward, they made a nice couple recovery moves there too. But with Toronto maybe taking a half step back, obviously Miami isn't going anywhere and Brooklyn is rising, but I think Philly is a real, real dark horse to sneak into that top four in the East and make some noise in the postseason. So they would be my big winner. Lakers aside, I like the Heat take. Portland's up there. Atlanta, if they can secure Bogdanovich, is up there. But Philly really stood out to me.
I mean, obviously the Lakers, you know, they replaced Howard with Gasol and Montrezl Harrell, and like they're better than they were last year, and that's scary because with Klay Thompson's injury, I felt like Golden State was primed to really make a run at the Lakers, and it's not clearly not going to happen now. Aside from LA, I actually would say that Boston had a really good free agency for a couple of reasons. One, I felt like letting Gordon Hayward go is actually going to be a plus for them. I felt like he just never seemed to fit with that team and with that system. Injuries certainly are a big part of that, but it felt like they were oftentimes better when he wasn't on the floor. Signing Tristan Thompson and Jeff Teague, I think are two small moves, but they're going to certainly help them. But you know, it was a layup and it was an obvious move, but when you sign your superstar rookie coming off an extension and give him a max deal, that's what you do. And so like Boston, I think had a pretty good offseason, pretty good free agency. And so I just really like what they did for the future. And it's just interesting that in the last 5 years, two of their biggest signings as an organization or moves as an organization in Hayward and Kyrie, they both have let walk. And that just speaks to you from the organization standpoint that Danny Ainge is not afraid to completely reverse course if there's something happening that he doesn't think is fits within what's going to make that team win.
There you go.
In terms of off-season free agency, the losers, is there one team that you felt like either missed free agency either because they had no flexibility or just made flat out the wrong move in the last 4 or 5 days? Casey?
I was going to see. Let's let Rob go first this time since I took the first one last night.
You got it, Rob.
Okay, well, again, kind of because it's not transactionally dependent, I think Golden State is obviously the biggest loser of the last week or so. We all are for Klay Thompson. I'm missing another season, but obviously, you know, we're not going to hammer them for that. I wouldn't choose them necessarily. I'm a little torn between two teams near the top of the Western Conference. But I'm going to say, and even though I just said that I think they rebounded relatively nicely earlier in this podcast by fortifying the power forward position, I just think Denver to come so far in this postseason, to realize so much of that potential in the two guys leading you and Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic. You know, it's not that they came up short on money. I don't think they probably came up short on vision. I'm sure they pitched Jeremy Grant as hard as they could, but to lose him to Detroit and then to revoke the qualifying offer on Torrey Craig, you know, whether it was a couple hours or a couple days, who can tell track of time anymore, but to lose both of those guys, two of their better perimeter wing defensive forces. I think they really, really lost a lot, especially in the way that they match up with other kind of wing heavy teams and, you know, big teams at the top of the West, especially the Lakers and Clippers, teams that they both faced in the playoffs last year. So I think for losing Jeremy Grant and then for letting Torrey Craig walk, who's going to be a great pickup from Milwaukee, I think Denver is a team that really sticks out to me as, you know, maybe it's not going to all implode for them this year, but there was a real opportunity to take that next step. They're really on the cusp going into this offseason, and losing Jeremy Grant, I think, is a big blow to that.
Well, since Rob took mine, I won't spend a lot of time on this because I don't feel incredibly strongly about it, but for similar reasons, actually, just the sense of an opportunity for, you know, massive change or significant improvement. And like, I think they're still going to be fine, but they're just not going to be a lot better. I would use kind of the same logic with the Pacers situation. You know, they were linked to a lot of, you know, bigger names, I guess in the Jrue Holiday initial rumors, they were in those. And then obviously the Gordon Hayward smoke about wanting to return home. And I think they're linked to Bogdanovich at one point too. And I know his deal isn't done yet, but just seems like that, you know, they've kind of got this in limbo situation with Oladipo. And while I always like Miles Turner and Sabonis, obviously, it just seems like they didn't get a lot significantly better. And, you know, they've thrown it to a first year coach who they're hoping is their next Nick Nurse. But that kind of be my, I don't feel like incredibly strongly about it because I think it'll be fine, but I feel like they had an opportunity to take a step forward like Denver did and didn't quite get there.
Yeah. For me, it's the Bucks. The handling of the Bogdanovich situation just completely blew up in their face. And it was messy. And even the Pat Connaughton signing, which from what I've read on Twitter, they completely
that was unbelievable.
The signing from a cap standpoint and ended up costing themselves millions of dollars because of how they basically put the deal together. And so the Bucks certainly next offseason is absolutely their probably the biggest offseason in the last 20 years for that franchise. But certainly the moves they were making this offseason were to put them in a position to re-sign Giannis, and which absolutely still could happen. We don't know what his intentions are going to be, whether he loves Milwaukee or if he wants to entertain free agency next year. But they certainly would have been much better off from a team standpoint if they'd been able to pull the Bogdanovich thing off, and they couldn't. So, to me, in terms of free agency alone, not counting draft night, that was probably the clear loser of the NBA free agency is the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, this is a very important season for them because if they are one and done next year, that is to me going to signal to Giannis, all right, I'm out. But that's a long, long way away. But that's going to be the dominant storyline in the league all season long is going to be his free agency. Right or wrong, it's just the reality of what we're going to face in the league in the next 8 months or so. So that's a wild 3 or 4 days with this team and the Bulls and with the NBA overall. KC, a little fact question first. We still don't have an official word on when training camp is going to start for the Bulls or any team. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I don't think there's actually going to be one, like, media day date. I think there's going to be kind of, like, several days spread out where just players are going to be available. So it's going to be a little different start to training camp. I mean, the individual workouts are going to be starting in early December as far as when the first team practices. I don't have a date on that, but it'll be probably that first week of December.
Yeah, and from a schedule standpoint, the league has announced that they're going to release the schedule half the season at a time so that – sometime that first week in December, we will get essentially the first 35 games of the NBA schedule. And, it's going to be a certainly big day for NBA fans to find out who's playing on Christmas. Bulls fans, do not hold your breath for that one this year, but hopefully they're playing December 22nd. And we have a lot to come in the next month with this organization, with this team, and with this podcast. So for our Bulls insider, Casey Johnson, reporter Rob Schaefer, I am Kevin Anderson filling in for Jason Goff. I hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. You can find us on Stitcher, Apple Play, anywhere you find great podcast. We are right there. Please rate and review us and give us 5 stars if you like us. If you hate us, give us 4 stars. That's how it is. We hope you enjoy your week and that you have a lot to be thankful for. On Friday, we will have a brand new edition of a What Are You Thankful For as a Bulls fan and NBA fan. So look for that Friday morning. Thanks for listening, everybody.